You're listening to episode 17 of the Where Your Keys Language Fluency Game podcast with me, Willem Larson, recorded on April 10th, 2010. It specializes in training teachers of languages, not just speakers. In this podcast, you'll hear Evan and I debriefing Dustin Rivers, our Squamish Where Your Keys language instructor, and someone who we've been training for the last few months to share the Where Your Keys system with his community.
I'm here with Evan Gardner and Willem Larson. We are going to debrief my fifth language night, and I am Dustin Rivers, Squamish language, Where Your Keys language coordinator from Vancouver, British Columbia.
All right.
I'm Evan Gardner. I'm currently in Eugene, Oregon.
I'm Willem Larson. I'm in Portland.
And I am God, and I am in heaven.
I thought you were everywhere.
So, how did your fifth language night go?
It didn't go super long because people had to do stuff, which was fine. Most people showed up like around on time anyways, so usually people show up like closer to 7 and then we finish around 9, but today we started around 6, so we finished around 7:45.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
So I've got a question for you. Hey, Dustin, I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
We haven't talked in a couple of weeks. How have the nights in general been going? I mean, you say you're on your fifth one, so, I mean, sounds like people are still showing up.
Yes. I have about 3 regulars who come. I picked up a fourth regular tonight and possibly a fifth next week. Slowly but surely. We had a new guy come. His name's Gabe George. And interesting guy. He's a distant relative of mine, actually. But the nights in general, it's a small group. It's not that large, so we're still picking up steam. But it is moving forward. And it's been going pretty good so far.
All right.
Are you feeling more comfortable as the weeks kind of click on? Are you feeling sort of more comfortable about hosting this?
Yeah. It's getting easy every time now. We had, I met him a couple weeks ago, not last week, but the week before. He's a distant relative of mine. And Gabe is the grandson of the late Chief Dan George, who is somewhat of a famous...
Right. Well, I'll be darned, huh?
So he's Chief Dan George's grandson. Famous from Little Big Man and
right.
Things like that.
When the magic happens, yeah.
Yeah, so... Gabriel is from the Tsleil-Waututh Nation, which is one of our neighboring tribes next door to us, also known as the Burrard Nation. And so the Burrard or Tsleil-Waututh is a bit of an interesting piece of the puzzle, of the mosaic of language revival and of Squamish language revival and stuff. So it's a bit of a contentious issue because historically Burrard or Tsleil-Waututh and Squamish, my people, were pretty much the same. Hmm. And back in 1923, when all the reserves under the Indian Act, the government legislation that covers all of the laws regarding status Indians in Canada, when all the reserve chiefs amalgamated to form one tribal government called the Squamish Nation, Burrard opted out and didn't join in on that. And there's various reasons why, various perspectives and opinions as to why that happened. One of the prominent ones is that they really felt that they were their own people and that they wanted to be on their own. So,
ah, Cool.
So they have their own reserve down on the North Shore, same as where I live and some of the other reserves in North Vancouver. They're just further down the inlet than ours. And they have a band of about 400 or 500 members, and they're pretty much just two families. There's the Georges and the Thomases. Like, historically, if you look back at their lineage, there's really two primary Burrard families, and then lots of intermarrying with Stolo, Musqueam, Squamish, Seashell, etc. So, interesting thing about Gabriel and Chieftain George is Chieftain George was half Squamish, half Tsleil-Waututh. His mother was from Squamish. Her name was Emily Jack, I think. And so she was Squamish, and his father was from Tsleil-Waututh. And so Gabriel has quite a bit of Squamish ancestry, as do a lot of Burrard people, actually. I have a few cousins from down there, and they have more Squamish ancestry than they do Burrard, but they're registered under the Burrard band because of how status laws work in Canada. So Gabriel is... He was. I talked to him briefly at the Longhouse when we had to sweep up the closing of our winter ceremonies, and he said he was really interested in learning the language.
Ah.
And so I invited him to come to our class, and we talked a bit briefly when he was here, and he said that he's actually really more interested in learning Squamish because Tsleil-Waututh, they say they speak a neighboring language called Hulkumalum, or Hunkumalum is the dialect name, which is a neighboring language which encompasses like the Fraser Valley, which is a solo nation going over to Vancouver Island, to the Gulf Islands and things like that. And it's a pretty large language with multiple dialects.
Hmm.
And it's a separate language from my language. They're related, but they're separate.
Yeah.
So historically, Burrard was either multilingual, in which they spoke both Squamish and Hulkumalum, or that they spoke a hybrid of it, or they spoke a variation of Squamish, basically. And... Chieftain George was fluent in both. He could speak Hulkumalum and Squamish, and he generally spoke more Squamish because his wife was Squamish as well. So his mother and his wife were Squamish.
Hmm.
So Gabe actually said that he's more interested in learning the Squamish language than he is learning Hulkumalum, and he actually finds himself easier learning it because his uncle was fluent in the language and used to speak it all the time.
Hmm.
Is his uncle still around?
No.
Yep. So is he married?
I think so. I know he has a couple kids.
Oh, great.
All right. Perfect. Another parent.
Yep. That's what I was thinking.
I can tell he's committed because he lives out near Chilliwack, which is about an hour ride away from my house.
Mm.
Hour 20.
Yeah.
And he works in the correctional facilities, and he said that he actually made it so that, because once a week he has to come into the city to work,
yeah.
And so he made it so that he comes into the city on Thursdays from now on so that he can come to the language.
Oh, wow.
Isn't it just amazing how some people will walk over molten glass?
Yeah.
People who, like, you know, live down the street, it's like, yeah, I was, you know, busy watching the soaps.
Yeah, right. The game was on. I couldn't leave.
It's like, yes. don't you watch Survivor? Survivor's on Thursdays.
Yeah, we actually had Survivor almost, like, it really became the central theme of one of our classes that we were having. Luckily, it happened the night before. So everybody wanted to come to class the next day so that they could all talk about Survivor. Like, actually, Survivor boosted our attendance.
Wow. That's funny.
Right.
Shared experience.
Yep. So tell us a little bit specifically about tonight. Like, what did you do? Give us the rundown.
Well, because it was Cal, Gabe, my friend Terry, and Tiffany who showed up.
Oh, I didn't know Terry was coming. That's great.
The interesting thing about Terry is that Terry was really one of my original guinea pigs when this whole thing started. So I've been doing Wary Keys with him for like months before we started these language nights.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually been through quite a few of the incarnations of the curriculum as well as my ability to teach it.
Yeah.
So this was his first time coming to a language night where I've become a lot better at teaching it.
All right.
As well as the curriculum's changed a bit, so So I treated him like a newbie, basically. But he caught on quickly. And we end up getting to Make Me Say Yes. Of What Is That?
Mm-hmm.
And so what did I do? I went through the sign language first. I went through a bunch of the techniques. We did What Is That? We started off with like doing What Is That? What Is That? What Is That? Four times. And then that is four times. And we did it for each of the objects.
Mm-hmm.
And really pounded that in. And then we did that, and then I started doing it where I would ask each object individually, and we went around and did that four times around the table. And then I went and started asking each of the persons individually about the object in front of them.
Mm.
So every person had an object, and I asked about their object in front of them and went around.
Mm.
And then I got them to ask me, and I went around and did all the objects. And then we moved into Make Me Say Yes and did that. And then we started doing Make Me Say Yes with everybody and then Make Me Say Yes with just individuals. And we started getting that far. And then eventually there, I could tell people were starting to get full.
Yeah.
And so then we went on a quick walk and we went on the walk and it started pouring when we got about three quarters of the way down the street. So we came back. it was so good.
Shared experience.
Yeah. But it was interesting because I know... Because Cal and Tiffany have been coming since the beginning. And Tiffany is like an adept learner. Like, she's pretty quick. And she was like, I could feel it in her. And she even said it tonight that she's really anxious to get to want and have give take. Like, she really wants to get there. And I'm pretty sure she could get there if it wasn't for us, of new people coming in all the time.
Yeah.
So, I told her, I said, you know what? Like, I bet you if I just sit with you one-on-one, we'd be able to hash out want, have, give, take pretty quickly. Like, I'm pretty sure I could get her to want, have, give, take in an hour with just me and her one-on-one.
Yeah.
So, sometime tomorrow we're going to meet up for a bit, and I'm going to do wary keys with her, but just meet her one-on-one.
And the advanced group emerges.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the decision to do that helps me out because... If I get her up to want, have, give, take, and I get her up to a level where she's pretty far ahead and pretty strongly ahead,
yeah,
everybody else, then at least I have somebody else I can rely on to take over the group when I have to do something, or if there's somebody like an assistant, basically, that I can hand it off to.
Yeah.
Right. Like, she may not be good enough to do setup yet to teach somebody where he is, so I can go run off and do that with a couple people, like new ones that come in. And she already knows want, have, give, take, so she can go on with the people who have been coming for a while and get them to, like, is that yours?
Mm-hmm.
Or do some practicing with people. Like, she'll know it enough to do that.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a training more people to run it, kind of.
Yeah.
But,
exactly. The plan is working perfectly.
Yeah.
Yep. All a part of the plan.
Yes.
It is all a part. And I'm really happy to hear you speaking in these kind of terms of these backups that you're brewing.
Yeah.
Perfect. And then also, you know, getting other people who are up to speed. So, yeah, it's interesting that you notice that problem of you know, well, not the problem, but the fantastic thing about newbies coming in.
Yeah.
And then saying, okay, well, now it's time for you guys who have been here a couple of times to go off with the newbies and, you know, do one-on-ones with the newbies. And mm-hmm. Now you're a teacher. You've been here three times. Well, welcome to teaching.
Yeah. It'll be interesting because I think every class they seem to be getting a new one so far. So I think that from now on, what I'm going to do is I'm going to, for a bit anyways, until I get a couple people that are good enough to start teaching the newbies. Like, I don't have any at that level yet.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'll do is I have the main group, and I'll say, okay, do this, this, and this. Do what is that? Make me say yes. Make me say no. Is that yours?
Hmm.
Go through each of those for all the objects, and then go around the table three times, right?
Yep.
So they know what they need to do, and they can go do that, and they know the language enough to be able to do that. And so I can just give them that direction, and they can go and do that for, that'll take them like 20 minutes. 20 minutes or a half hour, whatever it is. And then I take the new ones and we go sit over at the other table and I explain where your keys, I do the setup, I teach them a bit of the sign language, and then by that time, they can come and join the rest of the group, and we can move on from there.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Because I ran into another person at the mall today, and I invited her, and she couldn't make it tonight, but she was really interested. And she's another one of those people, because she lives out in Abbotsford, and she would, like, she was coming to my singing classes before, and she would drive into town from Abbotsford to come to them. So she was like, I was like, oh, she's like, oh, you're still doing singing? I said, yeah, but I'm doing it with the Canoe Family now. I'm focusing more on the language stuff now. She's like, oh, when are you doing that? So she was really interested.
All right.
So.
How has the walk been developing?
I want to either tomorrow, depending on the weather, I want to go on the walk by myself again, and I really want to refine each of the steps. I want to kind of layer or basically pack more meat into it. And I'm finding I need to find more obviously things to do, and not just nouns, like not just some calling out things, but things that we can actually do. Like the speed bumps are one thing, but the speed bumps aren't really that obvious. Like, it's not like an actual hill that we go up and a hill that we go down. Right, so they're not. I don't find them to be obviously when I'm doing them.
Ah, okay.
So I need to create either more Craigslist or something else that we can add into the walk, so that we can create more of a kind of layering it and putting more meat into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like some kind of verb? Is that what you're looking for?
Probably some kind of verbs.
Can you do see? Like, who sees the something or other?
Yeah, that could be one. There's, like, I remember from the first walk we did up at the youth house, but there was things like crossing the street.
Yeah.
Yes.
Things like, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't come up, and it's not obvious because the street that we're on is like a residential street. So there's, and everybody walks on the street. There's no sidewalks.
Uh-huh. Right.
So it's a bit different. And, and we don't want, like, when we move from one side of the street, like, we go down the street and we go to the left side because there's a red house. Or no, we go to the right side because there's a red truck. We walk a bit and we go to the left side because there's a red house. And we walk a bit because there's some rocks. Like, we're just walking all over the street. We don't have, there's nothing that is obvious enough that we stop, say, let's cross the street, and then cross it. It's not at that level yet.
Well, here's something. Can you make it, like, ridiculous and silly and thereby make it obvious? Like, when you come to a crossroads, like an intersection. No, you don't necessarily, we're not, like, the nice thing about the youth house was that we were at, you know, on the sidewalk, and then we'd have to walk onto the street and then back up onto another sidewalk. Well,
exactly.
The street doesn't have any sidewalks, really. It's just a street. So is there any way, like, at the intersection, stop at this side of the intersection and say, oh, now we're going across the street? Or is there any way to, like, set up the walk so that you go kitty corner or something like that? You know, so you're looking at something on this side of the street, and then you clearly have to cross the street to get to the other thing across an intersection.
There's a possibility of that. Like I said, tomorrow I want to go on it, and I'm going to go on the walk a couple times and write some notes and look at things and figure it out and kind of pack some more meat into it.
Yeah.
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 Think about things like that, and, like, who sees the Canadian flag?
Yeah.
Or who,
the
know,
other thing,
who lives
the
here?
Other, right. The other thing is that is because of the what the attendance has been like, you kind of have to really gauge it in the moment. You can't plan too much because I want to, for example, say I had 20 new people show up. My first instinct would be do the walk, but just do it in the sign language and just get them to understand the sign language first so that they just focus on doing the signs. And then second time or third time, then we start putting the Squamish in it, because if it's that large of a group of people and we try and do the Squamish and the sign language, so there's like two things we're trying to figure out. There's actually three things we're trying to figure out. We're trying to figure out understanding the words, they're trying to figure out how to say it, and they're trying to figure out the signs. It's not a limit, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So, but if it was, say, five of my regulars and one new person shows up, I'm going to do it for the regulars. Like, it depends on how many people are there, who's new, that kind of stuff. So I can't plan it too much yet because of that circumstance.
Yeah.
It sounds like, and it also sounds to me like you're just kind of figuring that out. Like, which tools are you going to pull at which time for which people and which circumstances? Yeah. I mean, that is really a massive amount of just learning that you just have to do by experience. There's no other way to do that.
Yeah.
Go forth and make as many mistakes as you can.
Yes. And then have lots of how fast names.
So, are you still starting the walks up in your living room?
Yes.
Great. Good. Nice. Same place to start. All right. And then when you're coming back, what are you doing when you get back?
We haven't done the walk back yet because I'm waiting until the proficiency of the participants is like, we just walked down the street and it's like, boom, 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 boom.
Huh.
Or because it's taken us like 20 minutes to get to the end of the street, or it's cold out, or I want to get back in time so we could do another round on the table. Like, there's all these different considerations that I'm thinking of.
So when you get back to the house, is there some kind of thing that you're doing then? Is it like food time or?
Sometimes.
Depends.
Depends on who's here and stuff.
Yeah. Any more kids showing up?
No, just Calvin and Liz's two sons.
Uh-huh. Great. All right. Okay. Well, then let me ask you this: for tonight, this night that you just did, what was your most successful moment?
I guess I was really good at getting Tiffany and Calvin to be really good helps. Like they were really solid helpers.
Oh, great!
Like angels.
I guess they were angels, but they were also like in the hot seats too. So, you know, actually, now that I think about it, you know what I would have liked to have done?
Huh.
Is I would have liked to get them to be the lunatic. I should have asked them to be the lunatic fringe. And I think it would have been faster if I had them as lunatic fringe and I just worked with Terry and Abe.
Hmm.
Because there wouldn't have been as many people to go around the circle, and it would have just been three objects.
Sure.
And I think because based off like how smart they were and how able they were to pick up stuff, like I think they could have easily picked it up. So I think that if I had done that, it would have taken me half as long to get them to where they got by the end of it.
Ooh.
Like I could have caught them up faster. In which case, then once I caught them up, then everybody can come back in, and then we move on from there. And I think that would have happened faster if it was just me, Terry, and Gabe sitting at the hot seats and everybody else being lunatic fringe.
And just being angels and pulling each other through it and just being really good game players.
Yeah. Because with everybody in the circle, I had to stop and go with everybody and like that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And at this point, Cal and Tiffany, they know what it's that. Like, they know what the objects are. They know what is that. They know how to ask a question. They know how to say yes. They know how to say no.
Yeah, well, and
they're ready to move on to the next level.
Well, and those would be your perfect people. Like, in my opinion, I kind of see how you're doing the idea where you're going to leave the circle and you're going to go off with the newbie.
Yeah.
But really, I'm thinking that it works better if you can get Tiffany or Cal or some returning person to be able to start doing that while you're now taking the rest of the group up to the next level.
It'll really that kind of stuff really depends. Like, I may do the setup, like explain stuff to them first.
Yeah.
Like, I might do like, this is where your keys. It was created by this guy. I started doing this so long ago. This is the roadmap. This is technique. This is like that kind of stuff. Basically, doing all the really introductory stuff.
Nice.
Right. Like, maybe I'll do that with them because I really understand a lot of that stuff.
Right.
And then I can get Tiffany to come. Okay, Tiffany, I want you to come get him up, get him to learn what is that for all of these objects.
Yeah. You know, there's something happening. There's a real speed bump that is a very counterintuitive. I don't know if I've mentioned this to you, Dustin, but I really like taking people really fast down the roadmap of proficiency. And like, just almost as sort of a gee whiz wow thing. Like, I, especially if like a friend of mine comes, I'm like, I'm going to teach you Chinook in half an hour, you know? And but what's happened is, it's caught up with me because then they become like these baby birds. They, first of all, they become very fluent and very proficient, and they start wanting to talk all the time. You know,
right.
They start wanting to use their language proficiency, which is great. But it's funny, they become like these baby birds who are like, now feed me, give me more, Craigslist or this, or maybe they don't even throw the Craigslist. They just like, I want this, I want that. And I realized that by not having them go do their own one-on-ones, by not having them struggle through their own setup and get other people to throw techniques, it's stunting their language hunting. So like, yeah, the universal speed curriculum you're designing is getting faster and faster and faster. And what it can do though is give the illusion that someone can actually language hunt on their own when all they're doing is riding in the hot rod that you built.
Right.
So to give Tiffany, especially, you know, people like Tiffany, a chance to work on their language hunting skills so that she becomes more obsessed with her craft of language hunting, becomes more obsessed with her language hunting skills than actually even learning Squamish. Right. Like, that's the eventual goal. That Squamish is the excuse to master this sort of immaculate language absorbing and transmitting skill set.
Right.
And so for her, but she's never going to be able to catch that bug unless she sees how much work you're putting into setting up the games. And that happened just recently with my friend Peter, where he was like, this is a lot of work. And he had lapped a lot of people who come to Chinook Wawa Night. I mean, he's gotten really proficient, really fast. I'd take him on his own private walk, but he hadn't done really any one-on-ones. And only recently did he find out, wow, this, God, you know, I'm really having to work for it. And it's like, and that's the moment when immediately that same night, his language hunting shot through the roof and he was able to hunt a bunch of new information on his own without any help from me. It was just like a totally natural, I didn't even suggest it. So that's something to think about, to almost like derail Tiffany and is it Cal? Is Cal the other one?
Yeah.
To almost derail their interest in Squamish per se and reorient it to, let's help all these newbies. I'm tasking you to go off with a one-on-one and help this newbie get up to speed. You know, show off your language hunting skills by hunting it right into them, you know?
By what we mean with the doing a one-on-one is that the person is leading a one-on-one. So a student who's been coming for a couple of nights can do what is that? It's now their responsibility, and it's the culture of the class now that, sure, you've been here a couple weeks. Hey, it's time for you to take on the newbie. Not, oh, I'm not ready. Oh, I'm not ready. But you're ready enough to at least do what is that?
Yeah.
With someone. And that we really noticed that with Peter when he then got back in and finally did a one-on-one with someone, led a one-on-one, what is that? Then he came back and said, man, this is work. There's so much setup. There's so much, there's so many things I have to think about and so many techniques that now I get to craft and wield and really try to move that information. So then he becomes a much better artist at setting up conversations that he wants to language hunt from us more fluent speakers. So his act of teaching increases his ability to language hunt absolutely one-to-one. There's an absolute one-to-one ratio.
Yes.
So, but I really like, Dustin, how you're saying about how you're going to give the introduction and kind of, you know, I heard this thing a while back that says, well, you're just preaching to the choir. Well, even the choir needs practice. So you give this introduction, you know, several times over and over again to everybody who's there, and pretty soon the returning people are gonna kind of understand the introduction that is the best introduction to be giving people, and they are going to start helping you craft the introduction so that it's going to be more enticing and more interesting and more memorable for all the newbies who come in. And then you're like, okay, Tiffany, grab this newbie and away you guys go. I would highly recommend debriefing that action, that one-on-one, just like we're doing with you, Dustin.
Right.
Debrief with them.
Exactly.
What things did you use? What What were your props? What was your most successful moment? What would you do differently next time? And I know that you have those debriefing skills because, well, we do this, you know, with you on a regular basis. And clearly the first time we met you, you had already, you were already well-versed in the debrief. So,
yeah.
The notes debrief. So record those, if you can, because that is really going to be, a fantastic learning tool and accelerator for Willem and I to be able to hear the debriefs, because we'll be able to hear a lot of information that you may not even be aware of, or that we may not even be aware of.
Yeah.
But that's really going to build your cadre and your core team of more eyes on this problem. That's really going to Superman 3 this whole curriculum. And I give it about 2 or 3 months, you're going to have some really well-rounded game.
No, I totally agree. That's
great. I heard about you're having another space available, and then suddenly not having a backup for it.
Yeah, that was funny. The premature labor thing.
Oh yeah, I had a friend of mine who said she was interested in helping me out. She said she looked round and round, so I sent her email to see how things are going, and then she's like, "Actually, I'm going into labor right now. I'm in the hospital." Holy crap.
Yeah, it's like Jurassic Park, you know? Life will find a way to try to cancel your language night. it's funny.
If things you can't possibly imagine are going to happen.
No, I totally agree. The thing I really want to get Squamish Rally going for is that I have a feeling that the attendance there is going to be much higher, much more consistent, and more engaged, because they're just two different communities. We're the same nation, but really two different communities.
Yeah.
They're like an actual community. And here there's, I mean, city folk are a different kind of breed, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah. Like in the rural areas, like I've traveled, like I go to visit my family in rural areas and stuff, live on islands and stuff that have small populations. And it's like when you go to a rural town, how often do you hear people say, like, oh, I've been really busy lately?
Right.
Like, people in rural towns don't talk like that. They don't talk about how busy they are.
Yeah.
And they don't have the sense of urgency or the sense of rushness where they are so busy that they have to find time to do nothing.
Right.
Right? So people in the city have to find time to do nothing. And it breeds this kind of, it's almost like complacency, but it's also somewhat of a laziness, because people who live down the street are like, oh, I don't really feel like going to language tonight. I'm just going to hang out here and watch some Survivor.
Right, exactly.
Right? It's like, but you got it in a small community where there's nothing happening, and they're like, oh, is language tonight? I really want, like, I would rather go to language than to sit around here and do nothing, because I don't only ever sit around here and do nothing. There's something happening in my community. Oh, I want to go to that.
Right, right.
So they're very, very different kind of atmospheres around community organizing.
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, there's whatever it takes to get people into high gear into actually showing up and actually being engaged in this. I don't know what it will be. Like, I can't predict or have the all-knowing knowledge of what that would be. Otherwise, I would have 100 people here so far and not 5.
Yeah.
But
we're looking for that, too. We don't know what it is. Is it a dollar figure? Is it, like, you know, $5 a night? Is it $1 million a night? Like, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I don't either. But really, 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 though... if we were to take, there's, the 8-stage model that's championed by Joshua Fishman, right?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
So number one of it is acquisition of Joshua Fishman's a linguist and a language revival expert, from United States. And he created this 8-stage model, consists of 8-stage process, and he says that efforts should be concentrated on the earlier stages of restoration until they have been consolidated before proceeding to later stages. The 8 stages are, number one, acquisition of language by adults, who in effect act as language apprentices, recommended where most of the remaining speakers of the language are elderly or socially isolated. Two, create a socially integrated population of active speakers or users of the language. At this stage, it is usually best to concentrate mainly on the spoken language rather than the written language. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to read them all, but I'll read one more.
Yeah.
Three, in localities where there's a reasonable number of people habitually using the language, encourage the informal use of language among people of all age groups and with families and bolsters daily use through the establishment of local neighborhood institutions in which the language is encouraged, protected, and in certain contexts at least used exclusively. So that's just the first three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And where I, where we're at in my community and where most people are at is barely at step one.
Yeah.
Yes.
And people try and do too much too fast and they get ahead of themselves.
Right.
And his other thing that he says that in that talk on YouTube, patience, prudence, and what was the third one?
Cultural specificity. The functional differentiation.
Functional differentiation, yes. Cultural specificity. Mm-hmm. So this is an example of like patience, right?
Yeah.
Patience that other people are being like that. That's how city life is for most people, so I have to be patient with them and patient with this process of trying to steps and reversing the language death. So I have to be patient. My prudence is that I have to keep going with it. Yeah. But there's this part right here, acquisition of language adults, a language by adults. So as long as I can get 10 people up to like advance within the next 5 months, mm-hmm. or whatever it is. Say the next 5 months I get, even no, let's not even go that high. Let's say in the next 5 months I get 20 people up to intermediate. Like really strongly intermediate. And we can have lots of really strong conversations at intermediate.
Mm-hmm.
Really proficient, really fluid, really well-versed, and really in-tuned into people's minds. At least like a good 15, 20 people.
Yeah.
If that happens, then we have done stage one, we've done stage two, and that, there's enough there to create stage three, where we create places where the language can exist within the community, and then we make those places publicly known that the language is alive in these places. Yeah. It exists here.
Yeah.
Then the perception of the language and what it takes to revive it starts to change, and then what... what the community response is at that point, I have no idea, because I don't know what the community is going to think when, like, what? There's 20 people that speak the language over at this space on twice a week for 3 hours, and they just hang out. It's not a language class. It's not a instruction. There's no teaching. It's just 20 people hanging out, talking in Squamish.
Yeah.
Like, that's a different kind of... different kind of perception of where we're at with language revival than where we're at right now, where people feel it so far away and that they're so they don't want to engage in it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and that's why I think you're perfectly right on with the patience part of it and keeping this really light and fun.
Yeah.
And not burdensome, like you are the last hope. You know, it's like, hey, you know, this and it may take instead of, you know, the 5 months. To get that number of speakers you're talking, it may take a year or two, but it's kind of like, you know, you're harvesting the energy out of a group of people there in you know, in close to you, and they are going to make the party more lively when you go over to Squamish Valley, and then the people in Squamish Valley, they're going to go faster because you've already got this cadre of folks brewed that you're going to take with you, and so anybody from this moment on. Anybody who comes to this party is going to have an easier time of it.
Yes.
And it will get easier and easier and more fun and more community bound as the weeks go on. It's like what Willem's always saying about, you know, coming to a party and nobody wants to walk into the party and hear crickets.
Yeah.
But you have a few people there who are going to be like, all right, there's crickets, let's get this party started. And so they'll get out on the dance floor and get everybody going. That's not everybody, though.
Yeah.
Those are a select few folks in the community who are going to go ahead and get the party started.
Yeah.
So that's who you're finding.
Well, it's interesting because imagine, like, say between now and the fall, if I had 10 or 12 or 15, 20 people, and we have language nights still happening on Thursdays. But on Tuesday nights or Sunday afternoons or whatever it is, we get together somewhere and we make the commitment that we're just going to speak Squamish language. And it's not a class. It's not wear your keys or anything like that. We're just coming together and we're just going to speak the Squamish language, depending on the level, because you have to be a certain level to be able to really do a lot to get around in that. But,
well, bowling.
Yeah.
Something. Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah. We do something as a group. We go out to eat together, or we go to dinner together somewhere, or go to lunch somewhere, and we just speak the Squamish language. Maybe that's it. We go to every other week, we go to lunch at a restaurant, and then for lunch on Saturday afternoons, and then on the other days, we're doing something in the community, but it's not like a class. It's just the language.
Right.
Now here's something with that in mind, I'd love to suggest something.
Yeah.
Start having that lunch now. Even if it's just you, start going to lunch every Saturday at the same spot and only speak Squamish while you're there, or think in Squamish while you're there, or have it be your moment that you carve out.
You know, that would be interesting to start right now because I have no language teachers coming to my class or to my language class. None of the language teachers are coming. I've invited them a billion times. Ray hasn't come to one of them yet.
Yeah.
But
maybe he'll come to lunch.
Maybe he'll come to lunch.
Yeah.
And maybe these people, I don't know who would come to lunch, but that is something worth thinking of.
And I'll tell you, like, when you start talking to people and they're like, oh, you're doing this? You're like, oh, yeah, I'm doing it. You know, I'm doing it at this place on Thursday nights. I'm doing it in Squamish Valley on Monday nights. And every week we're having lunch at such and such a spot at noon. Hey, come to lunch with us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Entice them that way.
Yeah.
Also, and it just sounds, because that way it sounds like there's more of a party. It's more of a thumping thing and not just like, once a month, cricket, cricket. Once a month, cricket, cricket.
Yeah.
No, that'd be something cool to do.
Yeah, even that, just that illusion of action may spark action.
Because I know the elders, they have a language elders group that meets once a month that my grandmother is a part of.
Where do they meet?
Different elders' houses and stuff like that. I've asked to go and I've never been invited.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do they do it like at a certain time? Like, is it like a lunch thing?
Something like that.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think if there's a way to like kind of piggyback on that time frame. If people who generally have carved out like, you know, an afternoon lunch, it's easier for them to carve out another afternoon lunch than it is for them to carve out a dinner.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they're already used to it, so it feels more easy to carve out another moment.
Yeah. I know. I think so. I'll try it out. I'll try it out. The other thing that I think that might be, I have a feeling it might be a bit successful in getting the word out there too, is I did the article for my newspaper, pretty extensive article. And the newspaper is going to get spread around pretty quickly, but there's going to be this really interesting article about saving our language. And it's funny because, saving our language is important to a lot of people, and they talk about it being important, they talk about our languages being important, but they don't actually do anything about it. Like, very few people actually do anything about it.
Right.
But maybe I might pick up a few people by having this article written about what I've been doing and this work and where your keys and everything, and more people start showing up, there's more interest. Like, it's really just about finding whatever, doing whatever possible, whatever creative ideas we can to bring people in.
Yeah.
And finding the ones that are just totally on board. And so far I have like three or four that are totally on board.
I gotta say, you're really, that's a fantastic start.
Yeah.
For all those folks out there in worldwide broadcasting range who say, oh, well, I've only got one person interested. Well, how the party starts.
Yeah. I mean, look at how it's working. That's how it works. That's it.
No, and it'll grow from there. Like, who knows where I'll be a year from now?
Yeah.
Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe 2 months from now, there's a surge of people. And a year from now, there's like 40 people that Like, I don't know what it's going to, what could or couldn't happen to change things in the future. I'm just going to keep trying different things and working on it.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to mention one thing about this sort of cultural specificity and having, you know, a place in the neighborhood or community where the language is being spoken. You know, that also is Canoe family. You know, where it may not be an actual place, a location in the community, but, you know, certainly a community event.
Right. Right.
There's extra bonus points there.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right. Well, so next, there's a possibility that we're coming up next Friday or next Thursday, I guess, talk to Shirley and see how the staff thing. Okay. So we'll just keep in touch about that. We're getting back from San Francisco, I think, Wednesday.
Will you check your email and stuff while you're gone?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'll email you Monday.
Okay, cool. Cool. Okay. Well, and unless there's anything left, I'd like to wrap this up and go to bed.
Yep.
So, anything else?
You know, I do have one last thing. So you say you're trying to find a place there in Squamish Valley or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Are you having anybody come with you, or is it a solo trip?
I don't know yet.
Nice. Well, my thought is that anybody that you can wrangle to come along with you, go there. Just go there on Monday night and go to a restaurant there, and, you know, start having your Squamish Valley night be at a restaurant and go there and have dinner.
Yeah.
Do they have any restaurants there? Any cafes?
Yep, there's lots.
Oh, well, yeah, great. So, yeah, you pop over there, have your thing, and then you're already kind of having that set time and place started.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was talking to the thing that might be happening is that they have a kids dance group up there that does their practices at 5 o'clock on Mondays. So I was talking to one of the persons from the dance group, and so what we might do is have my language nights on Mondays be at 6 o'clock there, and usually they go from 5 o'clock to 6:30.
Yeah.
So if there's a kid, I think they're around 13 and 14 and stuff. I could be wrong, but I think they're around that age. But you know what would be really interesting is, Evan, have you ever done Where Are Your Keys without a table? Like having a big open area and having all the objects be so big that you can't use a table for it?
Like how big? Like a yacht in the middle of the room?
No, like I have a drum, a full-size paddle, like things like that. Like there's a table won't fit these things, but if we have a big circle with these things, could it work?
Oh, certainly. Certainly. Yeah. Yep. And that's one of our workshop openers, actually, is to have everybody stand up in a circle and we do this little name game thing, and it works just fine. It works just fine, especially
if you've got
big stuff like that people are holding, you know?
Yep.
That's fine, because not everybody's going to be doing the sign language all the time at the same time. And even then, some stuff can be put down in the middle of the circle, and then people can say stuff, you know, as long as it's clear when you're pointing, you can be like, you know, what's that? And you're pointing to the paddle, and then you can be like,
well,
you know, is that my paddle? And, you know, and like, use the floor as though it were a big table.
Yes. Yes. It could be that for the first bit, and then we move in. We go for a walk, and we come back, and then we do Where Your Keys on the table. Like it could be a mixture of things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'll have to try that out. I'll try that out at Squamish with the kids and stuff.
All right, cool.
Yeah, great, great experiment.
You've been listening to episode 17 of the Where Your Keys Language Fluency Game podcast with me, Willem Larson, recorded on April 10th, 2010. Thanks for listening. Thank you.